brain.
Did you know you can listen to Superhuman Radio while mobile? That's right. Go to the iPhone store and download the free Shoutcast app and then search for the Superhuman channel.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. We have a great show planned. It's going to be a really easy show for me. We're going to be talking about honey. We're going to be talking with a career beekeeper, or I like to call them bee charmers. It just sounds so much more exotic. Stuart Dietz in just a moment. And then later in the show, we're going to be joined by Coach Rob Regish and superfan Sean Knernshield. To talk about a variety of things. And I call that segment Shooting the Breeze because it's just, you know, a bunch of us guys hanging out. And I can promise you there's going to be some interesting stuff discussed. We just don't have it all fleshed out exactly what we're going to be discussing. So you can be present for the organic process as it unfolds. We all agree that last week's Come At Me, Bro, my first attempt at a Q&A was a disaster. It was a technological disaster thanks to BeLive TV. This week, I'm going to try to use BeLive TV one last time because they offer some things like being able to put questions right up on the screen that I can't do with just a regular live stream. We're going to try it one more time tomorrow at 12 noon. However, for those of you who can't be there live but still want your questions asked, I've had so many people say, I can't be there live, but I have a question. Okay, so email it to onair@superhumanradio.net or post it on my Facebook wall. And I promise you that I will name you as the person asking the question unless you say you want anonymity in an email to me. And reading your question live and answering it live. And then you can come back and watch the show afterwards because it'll be up on the Superhuman Radio Network Facebook page. So that's the plan for tomorrow at 12 o'clock. Come and see the debacle that it turns out to be technologically with me cursing and bitching about BeLive TV. That's humorous, too. A lot of people got a kick out of that. So I promise you, I'll make you laugh tomorrow. Stuart Dietz, how are you?
Oh, good, Carl.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks to Sean Knernshield for acting as the go-between.
He's your agent now. Sean is your agent.
Your super fan, Sean Knernshield.
Yes. So Sean and I are friends now. We are friends.
Yes.
Make no doubt about it. But anyway, how long have you been? So what do you prefer, beekeeper or bee charmer? A bee charmer is said to be somebody who can stick their hand in a hive, remove a hunk of honey and the hive, and the bees will not harm them. That is not a beekeeper, is it?
That probably would be a very elevated level of beekeeper, and I don't really put myself in that class.
Okay, so we'll call you a beekeeper. So how did you become interested in becoming a beekeeper? When did this happen?
Well, this was actually back in 1971 when I was pretty young and just starting in the Boy Scouts of America. Back in those days, they had a beekeeping merit badge, and it was my goal.
No kidding.
It was my goal to try to earn all the merit badges that were available, which was well over 100. But I've always been interested in agricultural pursuits, even though we didn't live on a farm. And so one day, I was at Sears Roebuck with my dad, and they used to carry a pretty good collection of merit badge pamphlets. And I saw the beekeeping one, and I started reading it and bought it. And just became fascinated, and so didn't know a beekeeper at that point. But my dad actually found an older gentleman that had a few hives, and he let me come out and help me complete all the requirements.
That was nice.
That
was nice of your dad, wasn't it?
Oh, my dad and mom both were just. I wouldn't have been able to, do anything without them.
Do you have children now, Stuart?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I do. And I only hope that someday one of my kids is telling a story and says, and my dad did this, this, and this, and that was like the gateway to something that they loved, because every father every father wants to be able to do that. So anyway, okay.
Yeah. And that's very true with my dad on a number of different
ways. Yeah. No, I get it. So when did you actually have your own first hive?
Okay. That was in 1973. By that time I had, done a lot of background reading, and this older gentleman whose name was Carl Holtgren from Rossville, Kansas, he got me connected with the Northeastern Kansas Beekeepers Association. So started to go to those meetings, which, had a lot of old timers with a wealth of knowledge and experience. And that started me on my journey. And of course, back in those days, I was only 14 years old. So my mom and dad actually, put forth the money to get me started.
Okay, so now let's talk about equipment. That was my next question. So you basically have to buy a beehive, which they manufacture now. They look like a rack of drawers that go in and out, and holes and all that sort of stuff. So you had to buy a beehive. You also had to buy bees. Where did you buy your bees from?
Yeah, well, as it turns out, there's a number of different commercial beekeeping operations, primarily in the South and in California, where the season gets started much earlier. And they will actually sell you an artificial swarm of bees, which consists of typically about 3 pounds of live honeybees that come in a wire and wood screen cage. And then in a separate smaller cage within that large cage is a new queen bee that's been freshly mated. And so she and the bees that are out of various hives haven't yet become accustomed to each other. So when you get those through the USPS or UPS, either one, or in some cases, larger beekeepers will go down with their trucks and, pick up hundreds or even more of these packages of bees in the spring.
Right.
And so, there are certain things that you have to do to install those in the hive. And then you leave that queen caged up for a while where she's separate from those bees until they've become assimilated with her.
So do they clash? You have like the clashing bees. They're like, they don't know each other, and so they fight
right.
it out?
Particularly with a queen, if you typically just try to introduce a strange queen in a bunch of bees that are not her progeny, the bees will typically attack and kill her. So it takes a number of days for them to be acclimated with her odor and for them to have interaction with her and feed her and spread the, chemical pheromones back and forth to the point where, they'll fully accept her. And then, of course, she's the mother of the hive. And so, she lays up to about 2,000 eggs per day during the peak part of the season. I think 1,500 is considered typical, but anyway, so any of those bees that become her progeny are actually all her daughters, and in the case of the drone or male honeybee would be her sons.
Okay, so the hive itself, the masses of bees, are there male and females in bees, or are females only always queen bees?
Yes, the female is always a queen. She's a fully developed queen bee, a fully developed female.
Right.
And she's the only one that's capable of laying eggs that will.
So clearly,
other females.
We can clearly assume that the bee population, at least in captivity, produces a lot more males of the species than the rarity of the queen bee.
Well, actually, a typical colony at its peak population, or I shouldn't say typical, I should say a good colony in the peak population, which here in the Midwest would be sometime in late May, maybe to mid-June, when most of the honey plants are in full bloom and producing nectar that the bees make honey from.
Mm-hmm.
There may be around, typically 500 drone bees or male bees in the hive, and the rest of them will be worker bees, which are underdeveloped females, hatched from the exact same type of egg as the queen does. And again, typically one queen who is the mother of all those bees in that colony.
So will all of those worker bees that are underdeveloped female bees eventually mm-hmm. become fully developed queens?
No.
That's my point. That's my point.
Well, yes. Yeah. Once they reach adulthood, then, you know, it's pretty much a done deal.
So they either morph into, and morph is the appropriate word here when you're talking about bugs. They either morph into a queen or they're sequestered to be a fully matured female bee that's a worker for the rest of her life.
Yes. Yeah.
It's very interesting from both a philosophical point of view as well as a societal point of view. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. So the queen can produce up around 1,500 eggs a day, and they will become bees and fall into place in the categories that we just described. Now, who actually makes the honey? So we have bees that go out and they gather stuff from the environment that then influences the honey production. Is that then chewed and vomited out? Because I've heard that honey is actually bee vomit. Is that chewed and vomited out by the workers?
Technically, it's not bee vomit at all, because the worker bee has what's called a honey pouch, which is separate from their regular stomach that goes through, their digestive system.
Okay.
And so that honey pouch is of course, internal, but and they do have to expel that from their, expel the nectar from the honey pouch, and they give it to another bee, typically in the hive, which deposits it into a cell where it then resides as nectar. And, of course, they add enzymes to it, and then the bees will, a whole army of these worker bees will fan their wings at very high speeds near the entrance of the hive until an air current is produced that actually passes across the combs and ripens it down into honey. Because the nectar, when they collect it, it depends on the floral source, but typically it can be above 90% moisture, and the bees will ripen it down into honey.
Yeah, they're basically reducing it like we would reduce a sauce on a stove.
Right.
They're reducing it. Yeah,
and typically it's going to be 18% moisture or less when it's fully ripened into honey.
Wow! So they actually create convection in order to reduce the moisture, to evaporate the moisture from the honey, thickening it, and making it the consistency that we love when we think of honey.
Yes.
How fascinating. Now, what do bees make honey for? They don't make it for us. They must make it for themselves. Is it a food source?
Yes. That's true. That's the carbohydrate part of their diet. And typically they would consume it in the form of nectar. But in order for honey to store over long periods of time, it has to be ripened down so that the sugar tolerant yeast that are naturally present in the nectar will not cause it to ferment.
So they will eat the nectar right now while it's fresh, but this is their storage food for when they don't have blossoms and blooms to come to and create nectar.
Exactly right. Yes. Yeah. And that's what they live on through
now,
the winter.
Now think about how amazingly efficient nature is, because I want to tell people something. If you've never heard this before, honey is one of the only things, I'm talking about real honey, not the stuff that's out there today, they're calling honey, that actually has corn syrup in it and other things, but real honey has no shelf life. Nothing, no mold can grow in it. No fungus can grow in it. In fact, they retrieved honey jars from the tombs of the pharaohs that were thousands of years old, and the honey was still edible. It was still good. So think about how bees know something about preserving food.
It's amazing.
Holy mackerel. Yeah.
And then the other part of the bee's diet, which is, very important also, is the protein, which they gather from, which they get from pollen, also from various trees and other plants.
So is that the bee pollen that people are so crazy about buying and eating now? That's their source of protein? Because there are a lot of amino acids in there. Yeah.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So when we're eating the bee pollen, we're eating their protein. That's terrible. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't eat it. All right, here's what I want to do. I want to take our first commercial break. And when I come back, I want to talk specifically about being a beekeeper and maybe some of the things that people think they know about honey, but they really don't. We're talking with Stuart Dietz. This is Superhuman Radio. And I will be right back.
Discover the faster way of getting real results with BodybuildingSupplements.com. BodybuildingSupplements.com has powerful, proven solutions like patent technology, Crealkaline Supreme, Mass Pro Synthogen, and Adaptogen N.
RVD here. I love Adaptogen N. Give it a try. You'll see.
Buy Adaptogen N at BodybuildingSupplements.com. See remarkable results in 21 days or your money back. BodybuildingSupplements.com. Since 1993, the trusted source for real results.
Use promo code SUPERHUMAN and get an extra 15% off your Adaptogen N today at BodybuildingSupplements.com.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest protein bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Alaskans agree that sockeye offers the truest salmon taste. Over decades of fishing Alaskan waters, Vital Choice has rare access to the very finest of these fish. Vital Choice sockeye comes from smaller harvest regions with fewer boats and faster processing. So our sockeye is flash frozen within hours of harvest to capture its fresh caught quality. Rich in flavor, omega-3s, and vitamin D, our most popular salmon also abounds in astaxanthin, the potent antioxidant that provides its vibrant red hue. Save 15% off. Go to Superhuman Radio and click the Vital Choice banner ad today.
Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade.
Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
There's no doubt that when it comes to sweeteners, honey appears to be very different. And now we know why. Because honey is a manufactured food product, manufactured by a specific species. It's not sap coming out of a maple tree. You know, it's a very sophisticated, very technical food product that encompasses a lot of stuff. Minerals, enzymes, and everything else. So a lot of people like to say, oh, well, honey is just sugar. It's just sugar. It's no different than table sugar. It absolutely is very different than table sugar because of the process that goes into making it basically a meal replacement product that bees make. Anyway, Stuart, we're talking with Stuart Dietz. Stuart, so Sean kind of alluded to, well, let's talk about what could go wrong in the business of making honey today. What do we see that has become a deviation of the way honey has been made for thousands of years?
Yeah. Well, you know, of course, modern beekeeping and commercial beekeeping were made possible by the modular, movable frame hives that we have today that were, you know, actually came about through the discovery of the bee space, which was made, that discovery was made by a Reverend L.L. Langsdroth back in the mid-1800s. And so the whole beekeeping industry just exploded from that point.
But, what do you mean? What was his findings?
Well, he found that as long as a space is maintained of a quarter to three-eighths of an inch between the combs and the inside wall of a cavity that the bees use for a nest, that the bees won't build comb or glue it together with a substance that they gather to patch cracks and such called propolis that's also gathered from the buds of certain plants. And so that made possible the design of a movable frame hive where you can actually, you know, using another product called comb foundation that typically is a plastic or wax, either injected molded polypropylene or 100% beeswax embossed midrib that the bees will build on, just like they build their natural comb out in the tree, only this causes them to build inside a wood frame that this midrib is installed on, so that they build nice straight combs, and you can not only, you know, examine the hive by removing these, you know, which a typical hive will have 10 of these side by side in a box that has neither a top or a bottom. And there's an overall bottom board and there's an overall top. And of course there's a, you know, an entrance on the bottom board where they can come and go at their will, just as if they were in nature in a hollow tree. And the bigger the hive becomes, the more populous and the more brood they have, the more honey they store. You add these additional boxes called the supers on top of each other as the colony grows. And so,
but you just said something that this is where the trouble starts.
Yes.
So you can get bees to hive and produce honey in a modular box, but getting the honey out has become, In humans' quest to make it more and more convenient, there was a hive popularized a couple years ago that literally had all plastic inside of it.
And it
had almost what would look like a water spigot on the bottom that you just turned and the honey flowed out. And this is perfect for humans. Like, oh, this is so great. But you talk about propylene injected molds. You talk about plastics. And then you talk about beeswax and propolis. See, I'm cool with beeswax and propolis, but I'm not cool with all the plastics that they're using today in beekeeping.
Mm-hmm.
Because those enzymes in honey, as implied, they are enzymes. Enzymes are catalysts for breakdown of things that they come in contact with. And I got to believe that the plastic sometimes could, and no one's testing for this, I would imagine, leach the plasticizers that we hate so much that are causing all this endocrine disruption, could leach into the honey that they come in contact with and stay in contact with for long periods of time. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, I suppose, with, you know, depending on the type of plastic, although, you know, most of the, to my knowledge anyway, most of the plastics that would be used in any part of the hive construction would be compatible with European standards, which are very, very stringent.
Yeah, you know, but see, when it comes, but Stuart, this is something that I feel very strongly about what I'm about to say.
Yes.
The only plasticizers that are safe for us, I take that back. I want to rephrase that. The only reason some of these plasticizers that we think are safe for us are safe is because we haven't yet discovered that they're not. And we will discover that. See, by and large, the nature of making plastics takes chemicals that all appear to be endocrine disrupting in one way or another. But we don't find out until someone does an isolated study on one thing, BPA. Well, now they found out that the BPS is also bad. So phthalates are bad. I mean, I don't believe that any of these plasticizers should be in our food supply today. Unfortunately, they permeate our food supply. But when it comes to honey, I kind of feel like I want a hive that's basically wood, beeswax, or other inert materials that occur in nature, but not plastic. Is that impossible today for beekeepers to produce honey without using any plastics?
No, it's not possible. I mean, it's not not impossible at all. In fact, you know, a number of you know, beekeepers are, you know, still not using, you know, anything plastic in their colonies, and just using 100% pure beeswax comb foundation, other than, you know, being reinforced with you know, some very small wires, you know, so that it won't sag and
right.
And it'll hold within the comb during the extraction process.
You know, according to recorded history, there's evidence that beekeeping has been around since 7,000 BC. So add another 2,000 to that. So for close to 10,000 years, there's evidence from recorded history. However, there are fossils that are 150 million years old that imply that humans then were exploiting honeybees for honey. So, you know, this is something we've been doing forever, but just recently I think that there are some challenges. What kind of chemicals are commonplace for honey bees to come in contact with, even for... I mean, I'm not talking about Monsanto's Roundup. That's a whole nother show. But that beekeepers, by and large, use today that maybe are questionable.
Yeah. Well, you know, and of course, in 1987 was the first discovery in the United States of the Asiatic varroa mite, you know, which is essentially, it's about the size of a pinhead. And these things are just, you know, they're very difficult for the bees to coexist with, the European bees that we have here in the United States, because prior to that time in this country, the bees had never been exposed to them. Now, the bees over in Asia, you know, which are several different species, they've coexisted with them for, you know, thousands of years,
right.
Who knows how long. And so they've built up a symbiotic relationship, because obviously it's not in the mite's best interest to destroy the bee colony,
right.
Because they have to have a host. Well, what happens when you introduce any type of a parasite or a disease to something that had no exposure to it before, it quickly destroys it.
Right.
And so that's what happened here in the United States. So the immediate reaction was to start, you know, a chemical treatment regimen to try to kill the mites without significantly harming the bees. And the first commercially available product was called an Apistan strip that was inserted into the brood nest, not when there was any surplus honey storage on the hive, but just strictly, you know, within the brood chamber that that consisted of the bee colony and the honey and pollen that the bees would use.
Right.
And these were impregnated with a chemical called fluvalivate, and so did a very effective job. And personally, I've never used this myself. Back in the 90s, when I just made up my mind right from the start, I could tell that, it was just going to be a Band-Aid approach. And, sure enough, within a number of years, the mites built up a resistance to the fluvalinate. And now it's no longer typically effective, even though, it's still available. So the beekeepers over the years, the research scientists have come up with a number of other chemicals, some of them naturally derived, like thymol, some of them that are very nasty, hard chemicals. Two of the most popular today are formic acid and oxalic acid, which in very, very minute quantities, those exist naturally in the honey, but in the concentrations that they have to be used in to kill the varroa mite, can actually be very harmful to the beekeeper. In fact, especially when using formic acid gel packs, or they're sold as mite away quick strips in some cases, the beekeeper, has to wear rubber gloves and a respirator, or, you get a whiff of that stuff and enough of it, it can actually cause lung damage. And,
oh, wow.
And, there's been cases
and
where
it doesn't hurt the bees?
Well, in fact, if it's not applied in the correct dosage at the correct temperature, it can. It's been blamed for brood mortality and in some cases shortens the life of the queen bee. It dissipates very rapidly. Now, there again, the only time I've ever used this stuff was on an experimental basis with, someone else's bees years
right.
ago. We've never incorporated it into our operation. The advantage with it is it will kill both the phoretic mites, the mites that exist on the adult bees, as well as in the developing brood underneath the cappings that the bees, the wax cappings that the
right.
bees will build over the bee pupa when they're in development.
Right, right.
There's no other chemical that's approved that will kill the mite in both stages, but you do have to, like I said, there's been cases where the bees didn't, the beekeeper wasn't using the proper protective equipment.
And they got injured.
Well,
they
were even puking blood, so it can be lethal.
I want to skip our next commercial break. Robin Murphy posted on Facebook, and I was going to ask you towards the end of the interview, but we'll do it now, and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the influence that the foliage has on the flavor of the honeys. So Robin Murphy says, ask Stuart if bees are truly being affected by Roundup, glyphosate, and
mm-hmm.
how the honey is possibly infected with this poison as well.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where there's been a lot of varying results according to the areas that the bees are in. Obviously the unfortunate thing is the bees can pick up some of these agricultural chemicals, and it can be a problem for sure. I guess in one sense, one advantage is that not necessarily a good thing, but that minimizes any contamination of the honey is that when the bees pick up the chemicals in the nectar, they often succumb before they ever make it back to the hive. Some of the toxic insecticides that are
they kill them immediately, so they never even get to contribute that back to the mass hive.
That's often true. Now with the pollen, it's a little bit different situation because they pack the pollen, on their pollen baskets, which are just
the back
know,
of their legs.
The coarse hairs on
yeah.
the back of their legs.
Yeah.
And they, so they're not, you know, they don't get as much exposure to that. And then, but what can also happen is the bees will actually often detect that there's some foreign substance in, you know, some, something that shouldn't be there. And they will, you know, any pollen cells back in the hive that they detect, you know, that they've got stored contaminated pollen, they'll actually entomb that pollen. That
and I've heard that. I've heard
propolis.
That. I've heard they've
yeah.
actually built, like they've closed off entire areas of the hive because they basically, and that area was loaded with different types of nicotinic pesticides and herbicides.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've heard
yeah,
that. So I've heard that. So that's amazing.
Yeah,
so they do.
Yeah.
So the reality is the bees instinctively and intuitively in trying to protect themselves continue to protect the quality of the honey as well.
Right. Yes.
That's
and then the bees also have a built-in mechanism of sorts where they can, you know, they can tolerate, you know, up to certain levels of chemicals and they can actually expel those from their bodies until it gets to the point where, you know, they just become too saturated and then they succumb. But, you know, and goes without saying that the beekeepers, you know, and the commercial beekeepers, which are really the backbone of, you know, that's kept the whole beekeeping industry alive through their efforts. Of course, they have to because, you know, they make their living at it. And I'm talking about people that have thousands or even tens of thousands of colonies, but you know they're going to do everything they can to avoid placing their hives within range of where agricultural chemicals are going to be applied. You know, they're going to avoid it like the plague because you know they don't want to obviously experience the losses. Now, sometimes despite all their precautions, there are serious losses from insecticides
how many hives do you have currently?
Oh, currently we're just around 60. I
okay.
used to have back when you know when I did it more as a you know a sideline, I had up to 350
okay.
colonies.
Okay, but 60 is still a significant number of hives, right? You know, some people have one hive and they think they're a beekeeper. So with that being said, have you noticed any losses in volume of bees due to the exposure to any herbicides or pesticides?
Nothing that, you know, has been readily apparent. That's one, you know, over as long as we've had bees, I mean, it's, you know, you would expect that. But I've been very fortunate in
okay.
that area.
Well, that gives me hope. That actually gives me hope. I feel like, okay.
But there's some that, you know, there was a beekeeper out in central Kansas. I remember he had a slideshow. This has been back in the early 80s. And he had absolutely devastating losses from 7 applied to field corn in the middle of summer. And then, you know, he had, you know, locations where he had 50 to 60 colonies and they're just literally bushel baskets full of dead bees.
Wow.
You know, littering the area around his colonies.
How
and,
sad.
And in California in particular, where agricultural chemicals are so widely utilized, you know, it's also throughout the years been a huge problem. And then it's becoming more of a problem in some parts of the Midwest as well. You know, just like this year, a lot of crop dusting has been taking place through, you know, because of the higher Japanese beetle populations.
Yeah.
And
they are so
they
are such a nuisance, Japanese beetles. All
yeah.
they do is
yeah.
eat. And they're like big. If they could be slobs, they would be the slob bug. Because they sleep all day, 3 and 4 laying on each other like drunken frat house brothers. And then they wake up and then they just start eating again. They don't move. They until that rose head is gone, then they move to another one. They're really gluttonous, slothful,
right.
unlikable bugs, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
And real quick, I want to mention something before we go into I have to take this break. California, in their abundant love of chemicals on their crops, has destroyed virtually all of the hives that were there in California that today they have to lease hives from outside the state, and beekeepers bring them in and just to help pollinate the almonds.
Yeah, well, even though there's been a lot of widespread losses from pesticides with bees in the past, they haven't been wiped out by any means, and you know that's largely attributable to the commercial beekeepers that have been able to keep the hives thriving. But there's such a California produces something like 80% of the world's almond crop.
Now keep in mind almonds and avocados, which are both huge crops for California, are the thirstiest crops in the world. They require the most water to produce their fruits. And California, every year, is in a drought.
Mm-hmm. It's been for some years.
Yeah, it's the most unlikely place to grow almonds. You'd think they'd say, you know what? We don't have enough water here. We have to let's let them grow almonds in Washington State. You know, it's greener. It's Colorado. No, they have to grow them there, and they have to bring the water in. They have to bring the bees in. It's just humorous to me. It's just funny to me.
But as you alluded to, you know, there's something like I believe that current number is somewhat under, maybe just under 2 million colonies of bees required to pollinate California's almond crop during a 3-week period, late February, I guess, early part of March, typically, depending on, the area that you're in. But the revenue from the almond pollination has actually been a huge boon to a lot of the commercial beekeepers.
Oh, I'm sure.
The commercial beekeepers trying to make a living just off of the honey production, wholesaling out to packers alone, is a pretty rough road. I mean, it's a very rough road, regardless of what kind of diversity you have in your revenue. But particularly if you're just dependent on the honey market, it's been very difficult, especially because of the influx of imported Chinese honey.
I want to talk about this. So the next segment, I want to segue into the taste of honey based on what the bees are foraging on. I also want to talk about is it true that honey is being counterfeited today? As a beekeeper, what do you see out there? Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead. There is no other olive oil like Papa Vint's extra virgin olive. Not just because of the care and quality that goes into producing it, but also because the unique Nocciolata di Belice olive that grows in Sicily is like no other olive in the world. Its spicy yet buttery flavor improves any food it comes in contact with. Higher in antioxidants, Papa Vint's is raw, unfiltered, and cloudy, and comes from a single orchard owned and operated by the same family for over 100 years. It's the only olive oil Elisa and I will ever use. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Papa Vint's banner ad and use code SHR45 and get 2 bottles of Papa Vint's for $45 while supplies last.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
U.S. Wellness Meats is the leader in home-delivered, high-quality animal protein. Grass-fed beef, lamb, bison, and dairy. Plus, wild-caught seafood, heritage pork, and free-range poultry. Everything delivered right to your door within days of your order. There is no one better to supply you and your family with the highest quality pastured meat product and dairy than U.S. Wellness Meats. Save 15% off when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the U.S. Wellness Meats banner ad today.
If you followed my transformation on Facebook, you've been wondering what I've done to create such dramatic results. One of the things is I've started every day with the Ketogenics Prime and then train fasted and remain fasted till my first meal at 2 o'clock. Ketogenics Prime gives me all the energy I need while shutting down hunger. And since the ketones are bound to a quad mineral blend, I'm getting all the magnesium, calcium, potassium, and sodium I need to keep my minerals in balance. Try Ketogenics Prime yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ketogenics banner ad today and save 25% off your first purchase. Ketogenics Prime. I couldn't have done it without it.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips with 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Welcome back. I'm really fascinated by all this. We're talking with Stuart Dietz. We're talking about honey and bees and beekeeping. So, when a beekeeper leases out 60 hives to an almond producer in California, who gets the honey?
Well, typically during that period of California, you know, the almond pollination, there won't be any honey produced. You know, it'll just be the basic brood nest part of the hive that gets moved out there. And
okay, I don't understand that. So.
Okay.
You mean to tell me that when you bring a hive out to California, you leave some of the bees home, namely which ones you leave home? The worker, the workers are the ones that are making the honey.
No, it's still an entire bee colony. It's just that, remember we discussed earlier the supers or the modular boxes that are placed on top of one another.
Right.
And typically, you know, a colony will consist of two of those modular boxes that they live in year round. Anything that's stacked on, any additional boxes that are stacked on top of those are what contains the surplus honey that the beekeeper takes for himself
at the end
of the year.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, you just give them enough room to live in, and they're not going to make any surplus honey.
Right. And you know, although the bees will produce some nectar from the almonds, a lot of times the beekeepers out there will have to really feed them with a lot of sugar syrup just to keep them alive, because all they're doing is collecting pollen, you know, typically, and they're pollinating the almond blossom.
Could they make honey from almonds? If you wanted to?
Well, they could, but typically, it's not going to be enough for a surplus. It's just going to be enough for their own needs. And almond honey, even though the almond pollen is probably the highest quality pollen there is, you know, because it's just so rich with protein, the almond honey itself is going to be very bitter and wouldn't really be a good table honey anyway.
Now, and that takes us into, that's a great segue into this next discussion. So, 7 years ago, 6 years ago, Manuka honey became all the rage. But basically, Manuka honey is Manuka honey because the bees that make the honey gather their pollen from the Manuka tree. And so that influences the flavor, the quality, and the content of the honey, correct?
Yes, the nectar that the bees collect from the plant, is going to be, the honey is color-wise, flavor-wise, consistency is, going to be dependent on that.
And I used to say, if you want to grow Manuka honey in the United States, just find an area of the United States that the climate is conducive to the Manuka tree growing and grow them here and then put your beehives in the middle of it and let them do their thing. Yes or no, is that a fair assumption?
Well, that can be done. It's just that, in order to get the pure honey from any source, the area has to be just saturated with that particular plant, or it has to be at a time when there's, absolutely nothing else in bloom to get a pure, nearly pure source from, whatever you're trying to obtain.
Okay, so what produces the best? I guess there is no best tasting honey. It's like saying what's the best spice. They're all great when you're doing something with them that you want to do. So tell me about the flavor variations and the crops that donate that flavor variation.
Okay. Yeah, the biggest crop in the United States that responsible for most of the honey production is probably sweet clover, which there's the yellow and the white varieties. And it produces a honey that's very mild, even has a somewhat of a cinnamon taste to it. It's some of the very best honey there is. Alfalfa is another one. Tree crops like black locust, which produces another very white or water white honey that's very mild in flavor and really excellent. Fireweed, up in parts of Canada and Alaska, is also known for a very light, mild, excellent flavored honey. And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, you've got buckwheat, which produces a honey that looks somewhat like used motor oil, very dark and purplish, and has a very, very strong flavor, which anyone, if anyone had a preference for sweet clover, they probably would have a disdain for the buckwheat. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, people that like the full flavored, stronger honey would, probably think that the lighter, milder honey is lacking in flavor.
So as a beekeeper with 60 hives, I know that you must have these hives. I'm assuming that you go out and you find an area that is just lushly filled with a particular plant source. And then you go and you knock on their door and say, hey, I'm a beekeeper. Can I keep a hive on your property? And maybe there's some sort of financial consideration that takes place, or maybe you promise to give them a jar of honey every month or something like that.
Right.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, typically. To make it feasible, you're going to have, at least a dozen, maybe a couple dozen or more colonies in one location, Otherwise, and the commercial beekeepers, that run thousands of hives, a very common number would be 40 to 50 colonies in a location. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're correct. I mean, you do try to find areas that are, hopefully have a lot of sweet clover or have a lot of, potential for other nectar producing plants within a mile or two proximity, which would be, most of the cover most of the range of how far the bees gather from the colony. And so, in commercial terms, some of these guys have literally, hundreds of locations with multiple, dozens of hives at each location.
Could you, so earlier we talked about how there's just not enough for them to produce in California, feasting just on the almonds, and that a lot of them are receiving probably simple sugars and stuff in syrup forms and so on. Could you take a ginger extract, mix it with a little sugar and water, and keep it close to the hive so the bees use that as well? And would that then, could you actually produce like a delicious clover honey that has a ginger infused flavor in it by just giving them access to something like that? Something that's healthy, something that's beneficial. Could you do that?
Actually, that would be, unless you had the container labeled to show that it had other ingredients other than pure honey in it, it would be considered adulteration.
But couldn't that be a good adulteration? Couldn't you say honey infused with ginger?
As long as you have it labeled appropriately, that would be fine.
We feed our bees a little bit of ginger, and they put it in the honey. I think people would love that.
I don't know of anyone that's done that specifically.
Well, Stuart, you need to try it so we can have you back on the show, and you can tell me, wow, this honey tastes like crap, or Carl, this was the greatest idea. People are buying vodka that tastes like cotton candy today. Okay? They know that there's flavors in there. Could you imagine if your angle was, we don't add the ginger, the bees do.
Right. And I know there is, you know, flavored honey out there, you know, where people will put cinnamon and various flavors in it, especially with regard to creamed or finely crystallized.
Yeah, but
honey.
But they're putting it in. That's the difference. Right. Feeding it to the bees and having them put it in during the molecular building phase. That's got to be like a huge angle for somebody in the honey business.
The only problem I could see with it is that if you fed it in sugar syrup to get the bees to take it, then you know you'd no longer be dealing with pure honey.
I don't think people would care if you detailed it how we get the bees to eat the ginger. And we add a little sugar water so that they eat that, and then they combine it with the honey they're making anyway. I don't think anybody will care. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, the other issue is that during a honey flow, you know, typically the bees are not going to take artificial sources of feed supplements very well because they're so busy, you know, gathering what's natural out in the field, and which they greatly prefer.
Right.
You know, it's usually just, you know, in which that brings up another point. You know, we really don't do any supplemental feeding with our bees at all.
Right.
You know, we just do the, you know, just let them get through on the, make sure that they always have enough of their own supplies of honey to be able to survive. Now, some areas, or if you're involved in almond pollination, that's really not feasible or possible. Some areas of the country, you know, you have in parts of Canada, they produce tremendous crops of honey up on the Canadian prairie, but when the sources dry up, they pretty much have to just mass feed the colonies to you know, get their food stores adequate to go through the winter. So it's another point I might bring up that makes our honey unique from a lot of what's out there is that we just extract from the white combs that have never had any brood reared in them. You know, of course, the bees will, you know, in the brood nest part of the hive, they will, you know, the queen will lay eggs, and then the bee develops in the cell, in the comb, and the bees will leave, as the bee develops, it goes into the pupal stage and leaves a brown pupal skin in the cell. And, you know, and then as more and more bees get raised, the comb turns dark brown to almost black, which is fine for the bees, you know, if they store their own honey and pollen in there, but you don't really want to extract honey from brood combs, even though, you know, some people do and you know, doesn't really, you know, aren't really concerned.
Yeah, you want to take it from the surplus area, obviously.
And sometimes, and depending on your management techniques, you know, you could end up with brood area in the surplus honey super. Well, we make sure that we never extract any honey unless it just comes from a white comb that's never had brood raised in it.
Yeah, that makes sense too. You don't want that genetic material that's left behind to be in your honey. Let's be honest. There's one last thing I want to cover. And I actually texted everybody, telling them that you and I were going to probably go over. This has been a fascinating discussion. So many of us use honey and don't know the first thing about it. Just like everything else that becomes popular, and then there's a supply and demand phenomenon that takes place where the demand outpaces the supply, so distributors start to do things. You know, we know about this in olive oil. We've talked about it for years that a lot of olive oil isn't 100% pure. They're putting soybean oil, safflower oil, they're putting other stuff in it. We talked about it 7 years ago, and then recently
some news TV show just did an expose that, you know, olive oil is being adulterated. The same thing happened with truffles. When truffles became all the rage, everybody wanted truffles in their chocolate, truffles in their food. Well, they started to counterfeit truffles. I don't know what they were using, but they were using something else. And restaurants were getting snookered, and people were paying exorbitant prices for what they thought had real truffles, and it didn't. And I've read numerous articles that imply that this is now happening in honey, because probably about a decade ago, everybody started to get the message that honey is magical. It can help some people get over their local allergies, seasonal allergies. People take it at night and they say they don't snore. People take it at night and they say that they're able to sleep all night because it stabilizes blood sugar. So honey kind of became this cult thing. And as usual, the demand went through the roof at the big box stores and the Whole Foods. And I've been told that now honey is being adulterated with corn syrup. And one guy told me, if you put it in a refrigerator for a week and it gets crystally, and you know how honey gets hard, it's pure honey. If it stays a liquid, easy to pour out of the bottle, it has some amount of corn syrup in it. And I don't know if that's true, but do you have any opinions? Yeah. You have any opinions on any of this?
Yeah, that's not necessarily reliable because, yes, in fact, you know, keeping it at a refrigerated temperature, 40 to 50 degrees, it will crystallize more rapidly, and most honey in time will crystallize, but it depends on the, you know, the level of dextrose to levulose or fructose to glucose as to how rapidly that occurs. Now, there's some honey like Tupelo honey from Florida that's highly prized, and it will virtually, if it's pure, it will virtually never crystallize, at least not for years and years and years. And so that would not be considered to be a reliable indicator, although in some cases it could, you know, point in that direction.
Is honey being adulterated today? Do you, amongst all, I mean, you've been in this for a long time, Stuart, so you're like really, you're a beekeeper. That's what you do. Are beekeepers going, this is getting crazy, like somebody found honey that was 50% corn syrup the other day?
Yeah. And you know, that has happened. There's been, you know, different companies that had a product, you know, and these are companies that were distributing, you know, millions of pounds of product in certain areas that were, you know, convicted and fined for having adulterated product that was labeled as pure honey. Now, of course, on the store shelves, you can find, you know, what's called imitation honey, or, you know, even there's some restaurants, one in particular that serves something called honey sauce.
Yeah,
in little packages.
Yeah, it's like cheese and food. It's not real cheese.
And it's mostly, you know, it's mostly corn syrup with a little bit of honey in it.
But it has that on the label, right? Like if you read the ingredients,
correct,
it says that.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
But what about the companies right now that are selling on local store shelves and they're cutting their honey with other things, let's say corn syrup? Yeah. Is there a way for a consumer to know?
Probably not without you know, having a lab that has the proper equipment and protocol to correctly identify that. You know, there wouldn't be a good way, because a lot, you know, there's quite a bit of misinformation out there that's in some cases you know, unjustly levied against some of the honey that's on the store shelves. But in order to give the honey a long shelf life, in other words, where it doesn't crystallize, because, you know, people want typically a liquid product unless it's sold in cream form and they know what they're buying, you know, commercial honey will be flash heated to about 160 degrees and then run through a filter press, which essentially, you know, removes the vast majority of the pollen grains and other things, and then they rapidly cool it, and then that gives a product that, you know, it's still a good product. Nothing wrong with it at all. It's still pure honey, but it doesn't have all the qualities of raw honey, you know, that typically is available from, you know, local beekeepers such as me and, you know, a lot of people.
Is it important that people strive to use raw, unfiltered honey?
Well, it does have benefits that pressure filtered honey does not have. You know, we were talking about, it has the minute pollen grains in it. It still has enzymes that are intact that heated pressure filtered honey does not have. But one thing that I should also point out is that one of the big problems from a commercial standpoint in particular is that, you know, and this has a long history that, you know, take too long to go into right from the inception, but China, you know, has been, you know, the guilty of doing a lot of things that are really, you know, downright illegal, let alone underhanded. And years ago, they were using a product called chloramphenicol for apparently to treat certain bacterial bee diseases in the colonies, and that chloramphenicol was detected, and so they came up with a process called ultrafiltration, which is entirely different from pressure filtration, but that actually chemically changes the nature of the honey, but also makes that chloramphenicol undetectable. And you know,
you say undetectable. Are you implying it's still there, or are you saying they it completely removed?
Apparently, they've removed it to the point where it could be detected at all.
Okay.
But the important thing is at that point, going through that ultrafiltration process, it so chemically changes the honey that it can no longer be considered real pure honey, and that was finding its way onto store shelves or in industrial food manufacturing here in the U.S. And the Chinese were actually, you know, once they were caught in a number of cases with shipments of that ultra-filtered honey, and like I say, there's a lot of other avenues of this whole problem with the, you know, Chinese honey in particular, but they actually started shipping through third-party countries like Vietnam and Australia,
it wasn't detectable.
They were making it look like those were the countries of
origin. No, that's what I mean. They broke the country of origin, so you didn't know it was coming from China.
Right. And so, through in some cases what you know may have been honest honey packers, it could have been finding its way, you know, into honey on the store shelves. And this is something that, you know, the commercial beekeepers are, constantly vigilant about. In fact, back in the 80s and 90s when China was illegally dumping their honey on our markets in violation of international trade laws, under Clinton, he would do absolutely nothing about it. And so the beekeepers actually raised enough money to hire the appropriate legal counsel and won their lawsuit. But it's an ongoing process. You know, it's something that they have to be continually guarded and vigilant about. So that's another thing, you know, like I say, that's another reason why, you know, the commercial beekeeping industry is so vital to keeping beekeeping alive at all, you know, and the hobbyists are people like me, people that are considered maybe sideliners, are important from the standpoint of, promoting local honey, promoting raw honey, promoting the virtues of the hive products, whereas the commercial beekeepers are really supplying the financial backbone to keep everything going because their living depends on it.
Yeah, I like honey. I really, really do.
And I like
local honey. I get honey from local farmers.
Right. And another thing I should mention is that, I just got married here 4 years ago, and my wife Nita and me started producing comb honey, which I never produced in the past.
I like that. The jar actually has a piece of the honeycomb, which is basically
It's paraffin. It's wax, right?
It's beeswax, yeah. Which
and I've eaten that. I've chewed it and eaten it because if you chew it, you get all the honey out of it, yeah.
Right. It's perfectly digestible, and that's the most natural way that you can consume and obtain honey is in the comb form. And
that's how we would have done it if we were hunter-gatherers. We would have grabbed a hunk of that comb, and we would have just started chewing down on it.
Right, right. And so we're very selective about, you know, what we package as comb honey, and, you know, it has to meet certain standards for appearance and for flavor and for density, you know, moisture content. And so, you know, it's been a really popular product. And it seems like in this area, since, you know, others have seen the success that we've had with it, they've seems like more and more beekeepers are, you know, on a small scale anyway, starting to market more comb honey.
Interesting. Interesting. Do you have lots of different flavors of honey because you have your hives and on different pieces of property?
Well, just a few different locations, you know, I think just three is all we have, you know, averaging 20 colonies per location currently. Whereas, you know, back when I had over 300 hives, I had about 15 different locations. And, you know, so they were spread out quite a bit more. But then I used to market about 30,000 pounds of honey through retail grocery stores in the part of northeast Kansas that, you know, I grew up in. Most of what we do anymore is rather than through retail outlets, just direct to the consumer.
Interesting. I'd like to try some of your honey if you're ever inclined to.
That's one of the unfortunate things that we didn't get to make a trip up there today is that, you know, we had planned on bringing
honey.
Some.
Yeah, I know. Out. For those of you who didn't know this, but Stuart and Sean Knernshield were actually on their way to Ohio to like the greatest roller coaster in the world event. But it's gotten rained out because of the storms coming through. So they were actually going to be in the studio. And we're going to have this conversation. Stuart, do you have anything to plug? Do you have a website that you sell your honey on?
We don't currently have a website, have plans on having one, but I can, you know, I can share our phone numbers or our emails.
Anything that you feel comfortable sharing. So if anybody in the audience wants to show some love and get in touch with you and get some of your honey.
Sure. Yeah, we can be reached at either 785-304-5905. Or 785-969-6110. And my email is Stuart A. Dietz. That's STUARTADIETZ at AOL.com.
Holy crap. Are there still AOL email addresses out there?
Yeah, I've got other emails too, but that's the one that
I just didn't know that AOL was actually still a viable email service. That's pretty
well, in fact, Sean even used to have a Netscape.net account.
Oh, I remember
actually,
Netscape. Yeah.
Yeah, and actually you know the Netscape.net will still go into the AOL, you know, so that's one reason why I've kept the AOL as well, because I used to use the Netscape.net.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on the
show.
Thanks, this has really been fascinating.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
Lots of great information.
I mean, obviously something like this, we're barely able to scratch the surface. I mean, you know, any of the topics that we covered, you know, could be discussed for days on end.
Yeah.
You know, so it's you know, even with an hour plus time frame, it's pretty difficult to you know, really cram a whole lot in there.
Well,
we actually
went over, so just so you know,
I realize that we're over almost 15 minutes.
Yeah, and I'm gonna disconnect with you, take a break, and then I'm gonna have Coach Rob Regish and Sean Knernshield on the show. Listen, Stuart, thanks a lot, brother.
Thanks a lot, Carl.
Take care. All right, we're gonna take one quick commercial break. Stay with me.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
The benefits of a ketogenic diet are immeasurable. Health, resist disease, mental function, and even performance. But getting into ketosis can take weeks, if even at all. Now you can get into ketosis in 10 minutes. KetoKana is the first ketone powder that has been clinically shown to switch you into a ketogenic state by providing a rush of ketones into the bloodstream. Like to train fasted or want to spare more muscle glycogen during workouts? Take a shot of Keto Kana and hit it hard. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Keto Kana banner ad today.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhuman.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
In today's world, what would you give to have that ultimate edge, to always function at the highest possible level? That's exactly what the Da Vinci from Ultra Human gives you. Just one tablet a day increases focus, lowers anxiety, enhances social fluency, and improves your mood and drive. It's 8 hours strong with no crash. A sharp mind is priceless, and the Da Vinci even comes with a money-back guarantee. Find out more at theultrahuman.net. Make your brain 25 again with the Da Vinci from theultrahuman.net. Use discount code SHR10 for 10% off and free shipping.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest protein bar, now comes the Quest high protein potato chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Are you ready? Ready, ready, ready.
Welcome back. So Coach Rob wasn't on the show this Tuesday because he had other things going on, but he's on today. And so is Superfan and my good friend, Sean Kinnearnshield. How you guys doing?
Doing great, man. Live from Hampton Beach with Nicholas Maximus.
So this is this is the kind of guy Rob is, right? So it's Thursday. It's the only day he can do this with his son, so he takes him to the beach. This is what fathers do. This is what fathers do. No, it's the truth. It's wonderful. It's Sean Kinnearnshield, you were supposed to be here in my studio.
I was. Unfortunately, though, wasn't able to make it because of all the rain in Sandusky, Ohio.
Yeah.
So I had to cancel the trip.
So Sean and Stuart Dietz were going to, like, two big kids. They were going to go to this amusement park and ride the roller coasters and all the – and apparently they have some, like, killer rides. They were going to make a weekend of it, right?
Carl.
What?
Carl, they have 17 roller coasters. It's like the park to go in the whole world for roller coasters.
That is pretty amazing. 17 roller coasters. Holy crap.
I mean, a lot of these roller coasters are $25 million a pop.
Wow. That's amazing. And so you and Stuart were going there to buy one of them? Is that what you were going to do?
Yeah.
So anyway.
I want to be where Rob's at on the beach.
Yeah, me too. Trust me. It's raining here right now, I think. Hi. So
it is.
So here's an interesting fact. I don't know this to be true, but I'm going to just surmise this, right? So Sean Canernshield met Rob Regish through this show. Is that true?
That is true.
Yes, it is.
I heard Rob. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. First time you heard Rob. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, first time I heard Rob was on Superhuman Radio. But did you guys do the deal with
Connolly?
Oh. Dr. Connolly before he came on
Yes,
Human Radio,
that's
right?
That's how I met him. He was a guest on the Body RX podcast that I produced for Dr. Scott Connolly.
That's where I heard Rob the very first time was on that show.
I'll never forget that show, Rob, because that was where Rob Wolf, who's a great guy and a friend of mine, was talking about something, and he used an analogy, and he said something about when a monkey reaches in to grab the apple, they're caught. Oh, I think it was about eating monkey brain, and he talked about how in these countries what they do is they trap monkeys because they put like an apple in a jar. When the monkey reaches in and grabs the apple, his fist combined with the apple become too big for him to pull his hand out of the jar. So the monkey stays there, and then they catch him. And Rob said, well, I don't know anything about catching any monkeys. He goes, and to tell you the truth, I've never been to that country, but here's what I do know about building muscle. It was a classic segue, and I thought to myself, who is this guy? I got to get him on the air. This is good. You know, he's good.
he was hilarious on that.
Yeah, you were good. You were good. And so that's how the relationship started. But here's the thing I wanted to mention. So you met Rob Regish through the podcast, but now you guys are business partners.
Well, yeah. I mean, I remember I hired Rob for an hour worth of his time. Anybody out there listening that wants to hire Rob, he's a fantastic guy to hire to ask questions to.
Yeah.
That's how I paid him money. I thought, man, this guy's great. So I've just been silently listening in the background to find out what Rob was like as a person, you know, his character, his demeanor, his ethics, his morality. And it's like, this guy's a good guy. I mean, he tells people not to buy his product. I'm like, how more honest can you get than that?
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, all right, this is a guy, if I'm ever going to do business with anybody, this is the guy that I'm going to choose to formulate a product. And I just kind of silently in the background just paid attention to see what his character was like. And it's like, you can't get more of an upright, you know, stand-up guy than Rob. I mean, I don't want to exclude you, Carl, but I mean, as far as...
You already have. Don't worry about it. Don't worry. Just go on. No, I feel the same way about Rob. Rob is
no,
a friend.
People have no idea how honest and how good Rob is. I mean, this guy, and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
And it's like, I used three of his products already. It's like, I use Progenitor.
Oh, dude, Mass Pro Synthogen works. If you listen to the ads, and I will tell you, I used it this morning training. And I don't take a lot of supplements that I don't believe in. Let's put it that way.
Carl, I buy 12 bottles at a time when I buy Mass Pro Synthogen X2.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna have
to buy it that way too, because I'm taking 9 caps at a time and it's working. It's working big time.
Yeah, it's the best.
So let's talk about your venture. Hey Rob, let's talk about the venture.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I guess I'll do this chronologically. For the longest time, I have been trying to formulate a fourth product that flows along with my understanding of muscle growth. Stimulate, recover, and grow. Obviously, Synthogen for recovery, Progenitrex to accelerate muscle growth. What was missing was a pre-workout type product that would allow people to lift heavier and frankly generate greater overload. And as I looked at the pre-workout arena, frankly, you got a bunch of tub products out there, one or two scoops a serving, and including the label and the bottle they're shipped in, it costs about $6 to make. And they're charging $30, $40, $50 for it. So I was frustrated with that. And, however, I bumped into issues both in Europe and the United States with ingredients and frankly, some financing. And just out of the blue, Sean called me up And if you can imagine this, he says, listen, I believe in you so much, I want to, you know, contribute some venture capital. So that's why we're here today and on the cusp of introducing.
And Rob, we were just casually talking, and I'm like, Rob, why don't you come out with a pre-workout? And he's like, Sean, I've already been working on it for like a year. And I said, really? And he says, yeah, I've been working on it. I said, well, I would like to be involved in this. You know, could I be involved? And that's how it came together. You know, that was the start of it. I mean, Rob was already working on it ahead of time, but that's kind of what was the genesis, and we just moved forward from there.
So when is the pre-workout finally going to be here? I tried the first iteration, and it was great. I really liked it. It wasn't overstimulating at all, but it definitely made me feel like the room got brighter. And I definitely had a sense of what could only be called a sense of well-being. I actually started texting Rob. I was sitting in the airport in Billings, Montana, flying home, and I woke up early one morning, and I didn't want to drink the crappy coffee in my room. And I thought, oh, I've got that sample. Jeff Galini is the company, AAP is the company that's making it for you guys. And he was like, Rob wanted me to give you this. It was like 10 caps in there. And a serving was 2 caps, I think it was. And I took them that morning, and I went on to the airport, and I was like, holy crap, this feels so good. And I started texting him.
It absolutely has that feel-good effect to it without the jitters and, you know, the shakiness and the paranoia that, frankly, works against you in two ways. Number one, too much stimulation, and you'll actually be weaker. And secondly, almost all of those products release massive amounts of cortisol. And you can see this, a guy, you know, a year after using XYZ pre-workout, he's no bigger and stronger, and a lot of times he's smaller and weaker. So I wanted to rectify those problems, and I'm very confident that we have solved for that.
So when will the product actually be available?
So here's the deal on that, Carl. Go ahead.
No, you're probably closer to it than I am.
Here's the deal, Carl. Right now we are waiting on the registered trademark for the name of the product.
Rob, did you use the name that I suggested?
No.
Okay.
Well, that was no, but it was close.
Okay.
You know, but we'll see. You know, as to ultimately what transpires. But if I'm not mistaken, you know, best estimates on an ETA or toward the end of the year, at the very latest, early next year.
That's exciting.
It's one of those deals, Carl, where the attorney said it can take between 1 month and like 12 to 14 months to get the registered trademark. But as soon as she tells us we've got it,
right,
it's going to happen real quick after that. So
yeah,
it could be any time, but probably worst case scenario would be like early 2018.
Very cool. Very, very cool.
But we don't know for sure. You know, we got to get the registered trademark first, but everything else is, Rob has already signed off on the formulation. It's a done deal. I mean, the formula that you tried, Carl, there was one revision after that, and Rob made it even better.
Wow. Did you put the methamphetamine in it like I had suggested?
No, as a matter of fact, you know, it's from start to finish, this project has taken between 2 and 3 years, which is about what I spent on Synthogen. And a large part of the reason for that was that we're attempting and did ultimately put a WADA-compliant pre-workout together such that, you know, not just the rank-and-file lifters of the world and gym rats, but athletes from all different sports are going to be able to use it and not have to worry about, you know, false positives and that sort of thing. It is an exceptionally clean product from start to finish.
See, I told Rob, I said, Rob, the only way I'm going to do this is if you formulate it, and the only way I'm going to do it is if Jeff Galini makes it.
Yeah, there you go.
That's the only way I'm going to do this. And Jeff Galini's lab, you know, they're an informed choice, informed sport facility, and that's going to be made in his facility.
Right.
And then later on down the road, when we get a little more money coming in, we're going to go ahead and get the informed sport certification for that, for our product.
Good. Very, very good.
It'll be right on the label, informed sports. So anybody that's, you know, Major League Baseball, NFL, National Hockey League, any of those guys at a pro level, tennis, it doesn't matter. They'll know that they can take it, and they don't have to worry one bit.
Yeah, that's important. That's really, really important. It really, really is, especially from when it comes to a pre-workout, because pre-workouts, by and large, are more susceptible to being laced with things that aren't on their label than probably
you,
most
you know
other
how
supplements.
Jeff is.
Yeah.
You know how Jeff is. Yeah. Jeff is one of those guys. He will not allow something like that.
He won't let it in his facility because he's afraid that it'll get in other things. He won't even let it in his facility. I know.
He's amazing. I mean, if nobody ever has heard about his facility, it is absolutely knock your socks off amazing. I mean, he tests every raw ingredient when it comes through the front door. He rejects a bunch of it because it doesn't pass, you know, his test. He tests the product while it's being made, and then he tests it again after the product's made before he ships it out.
Yeah, no, I know.
It's top notch. That's where your Thrive is made, right?
Yep, that's right. And that's why.
Yeah,
and that's where Primal D is going to be made too. We have samples of Primal D that should be out next week to us, and we're going to do our clinical trials with it. I am so frigging excited about Primal D. Look.
Yeah, that's cool.
I mean, this is another thing that's been years in the making. You know, we introduced it. We had to pull it off the market because it wasn't performing well. The transdermal vehicle that we had made for it wasn't consistent. Some people responded, some people didn't, and I wasn't going to be tied to a product like that.
Yeah.
How much time?
What's that?
How much time do we have before the break?
No, I want to take a break now. I want to take a break now because I have questions for Rob anyway. So let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break.
Okay.
We can pick up on the other end if you want to talk more about Primal D or whatever, but let's take the break now. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Discover the faster way of getting real results with BodybuildingSupplements.com. BodybuildingSupplements.com has powerful, proven solutions like patent technology, Crealkaline Supreme, Mass Pro Synthogen, and Adaptogen N.
RVD here. I love Adaptogen N. Give it a try. You'll see.
Buy Adaptogen N at BodybuildingSupplements.com. See remarkable results in 21 days or your money back. BodybuildingSupplements.com. Since 1993, the trusted source for real results.
Use promo code SUPERHUMAN and get an extra 15% off your Adaptogen N today at BodybuildingSupplements.com.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
There is no other olive oil like Papa Vint's extra virgin olive, not just because of the care and quality that goes into producing it, but also because the unique Nocciolata di Belice olive that grows in Sicily is like no other olive in the world. Its spicy yet buttery flavor improves any food it comes in contact with. Higher in antioxidants, Papa Vint's is raw, unfiltered, and cloudy, and comes from a single orchard owned and operated by the same family for over 100 years. It's the only olive oil Elisa and I will ever use. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Papa Vince banner ad and use code SHR45 and get two bottles of Papa Vince for $45 while supplies last.
U.S. Wellness Meats is the leader in home-delivered, high-quality animal protein. Grass-fed beef, lamb, bison, and dairy. Plus, wild-caught seafood, heritage pork, and free-range poultry. Everything delivered right to your door within days of your order. There is no one better to supply you and your family with the highest quality pastured meat product and dairy than U.S. Wellness Meats. Save 15% off when you use the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the U.S. Wellness Meats banner ad.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advance contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advance. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advance banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's livonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. Talking with Coach Rob Regish and Sean Kernshield, two unlikely partners that met through my podcasting efforts and now are in business together. So, Sean, you wanted to say something. You said, are we going to take a break now? And you had something on your mind. What was it?
Shoot, I don't remember. I heard that Ghostbusters. I'm thinking, who are you going to call?
Oh, man.
Ghostbusters.
Well, we were talking. Let me jog your memory. We were talking about Primal D and that it's coming back.
I know what I was going to say. I'm just joking with you.
Oh, okay.
So there's a lot of things I can't say, but I just wanted to mention maybe a few things that I can say. Because Rob told me there are certain things I can't say.
Yeah, you can't. When I first got into this business, I went to a meeting at a television show station with my friend Tony Vannetti, and we had a great meeting up until the moment that I got on my soapbox and started talking about how the FDA is responsible for more deaths than any other regime in history. And I still had them. And then I said, even the Nazis, and the entire meeting... The entire meeting fell apart from that moment on. And when we got out in the hall, Tony looked at me and said, there's only one rule in pitching a TV show. I said, what's that? He says, never say the Nazis, never say Adolf Hitler. And to this day, whenever I see him, we laugh about that because I totally blew the appointment apart because I happened to refer to the Nazis when comparing them to the FDA. So what could you possibly say worse than that, Sean?
It sounds appropriate to me, what you said.
Yeah. Well, you're crazy like me.
Well, yeah. I a lot of times I stick my foot in my mouth, yeah. And it's like, oops, I shouldn't have said that.
Robin Murphy, by the way, just posted on Facebook. He says, I think that Sean and Rob's product is going to be even bigger for college students cramming for a big test, midterms, etc. As it gives you focus and ability to concentrate without too much stimulant, a perfect blend giving you much like the effect of Adderall. So many college students / doctors and lawyers take for focus. They do Adderall and the ability to intake information that normally puts you to sleep.
And musicians take Adderall.
Yeah, gamer. You know who else? Gamers. Gamers take Adderall
because they
want to play
better. People play video games.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm gonna let Rob talk about that because that's one of the byproducts of this product.
You become a gamer?
We haven't even really talked about what the product does.
You become a gamer. You take this product, and next thing you know, you're glued to the TV playing games.
Yeah, you know, her analogy there is actually quite accurate. If I were
that's
to
him, that's
describe,
him.
Yeah, Robin is a that, and sorry, that's an honest mistake. I've done that. Robin Murphy is a guy.
But the fact is, it's a very accurate assessment of what the product will be. So if current pre-workouts are 90 to 100% acting on the central nervous system, our product, by contrast, is perhaps 25% central nervous system stimulation, but 75% of it happens in the brain. And why the brain? For the very simple reason that the message to contract muscle originates in the brain, travels down the spinal cord, traverses a nerve coming off the vertebrae, telling muscle to contract. The more muscle that you can contract simultaneously, the different muscle groups, the more weight you can lift, and therefore the stronger the overload stimulus and the message to grow. So that is the essence of the product. You're going to be stronger. You're going to be lifting more weight, both alpha strengths expressed as a one rep max and beta strengths as total tonnage, amplifying the growth response.
Yeah.
So Carl, can you imagine, like, I mean, it's going to be good for people that lift weights, but can you imagine people that play basketball, baseball,
anything where focus
golf.
Is important. And don't forget, fatigue begins in the brain. Your muscles
right.
don't get
True.
Tired. Your brain tells your muscles back down. So fatigue begins in the brain. So that's an important
people that are running track, you know, running the 100-meter dash.
Hey, postal carriers, right? They got to walk all
Anybody.
Day. They got to get it right. I'm being serious. You know, you got to tell
you, Carl. It's gonna
good.
It's gonna have the word pre-workout on the front of the bottle, but really, it's almost like a pre anything.
Yeah, pre whatever you're gonna do. Hey, Rob, I got a question for you. You may have talked about this on the BPPH show, but. And I think you did, but what's your take on hygienamine?
Hygienamine is an ingredient that we've looked at for the product, but if memory serves, there was some water compliance issues on it. It is a what I call a mild to moderate stimulant
mm-hmm.
with some interesting effects in the brain. In the final analysis, it didn't make the cut, though. Because, I found something better.
Okay. I was just curious because I've never used it before, but recently I've been using someone's pre-workout, and it had 20 milligrams of hygienamine in it, and I noticed that my body temperature, I always had chills at the end of the night when it wore off, and it's been known to be a thermogenic. It also has some properties like ephedra as far as blood vessel it improves, it doesn't it's not a constrictor, it's actually an expander, and you feel warm but the only thing I don't like about it is if I take the 20 milligram dose at night, I literally feel like I have the chills like for the couple hours and then it goes away. It's like when it's wearing off. But if I just take 10 milligrams, I don't feel that.
Yeah, you know, we looked at things like evodiamine and related compounds. At the end of the day, you know, I do not want a product out there that's giving people chills or have mild flu-like symptoms. What we were gunning for, frankly, was a product you could take at, say, 5 o'clock, have a killer workout after work, and still get to sleep by 9. And that's pretty much it. It kicks in between 30 and 45 minutes after you take it. For some people, a bit sooner, but it washes out at about the four-hour mark, which lends itself to pretty flexible dosing.
Interesting.
I hear from a lot of people that wanted a non-stimulant product because they trained after work or late in the afternoon, and who wants to be sitting there with saucer eyes at 2 a.m.?
Yeah.
And that's something that I told Rob early on when I asked him if I could get involved. I said, Rob, I'm doing this. One reason I'm doing it is, you know, kind of for selfish reasons, because I want a pre-workout that does not make me anxious. It doesn't make my heart race. It doesn't make me jittery. It doesn't do anything like that. I just want it to make me stronger. And so that's what he focused on. And Rob, I got to say, you knocked it out of the park with this one. I mean, I know the ingredients, but there's 9 ingredients, and he combined them in such a way that it's a very novel formula. Nobody else in the world has this product.
Do you train at night, Sean?
I do. And it does not keep you awake. I In fact, I mean, I can't speak for everybody else, but I literally, I didn't get, it's like I didn't even take anything other than the fact that I was able to, like, concentrate really, really well. You know how you get when you have a lot of weight on your back when you got to do squats and you're thinking, oh man,
yeah,
I'm 45 years old and I got to go get under that bar with
right,
all those plates on it,
yeah,
and do all these reps, and you're just kind of dreading it a little bit, and you're,
yeah,
thinking, oh man. Well, with this product, the way I felt is it's like, well, let me go get this set done. I'm just going to go over there and do it. And you didn't have to, like, really sit there and amp yourself
but,
up.
But, Sean, I gotta say something because a lot of people in the audience are thinking what I'm saying. And so I have to say this, okay? You have a vested interest in loving this product. So I believe you. I believe, don't get me wrong, but I got to say this because there's people in the audience right now thinking, oh, yeah, sure, you're going overboard about this product, but it's your product.
But I'm just
telling you.
But here's the thing. Ask Rob this. I said, Rob, I said, if I try this and it sucks, I am not going to be involved. I don't want any part of it.
I understand.
I told him that.
I understand, but I'm just telling you from the perspective of the listener who's hearing you go on and on. They're like, oh, yeah, okay, I get it, but this is your product. So what the acid test is going to be.
I think, you know what, I can speak to that. I can understand and appreciate those concerns. But I've been on SHR for 5 years now, and the products that I have out there, Synthogen, Progenadrex, Tricrogen, I have quite a reputation to lose. So if anybody thinks that I or Sean was going to invest in a product that didn't knock people's socks off, think again. You know, I do not. We went through more iterations, prototypes of this formula than we did on Synthogen, if that tells you anything.
Yeah, no, I know.
It has been tested, retested, and is going to work across a broad spectrum of people, but for a very broad spectrum.
I like it. I like the version I tried that day coming home. I told you that it even increased my libido. I felt like I felt real frisky when I was taking it. It was
you,
like, oh, wow.
You tried the next to the last version, Carl.
Yeah. I love it.
Here's another thing. We are so confident in this product. I mean, I am so confident that I'm going to put my money where my mouth is, and I'm going to say one bottle – one person, 1 year guarantee. No, you know, I don't even want the bottle back. Buy it, try it. If you don't like it, I'm going to give you your money back on one bottle for that one person for a whole stinking year.
You mean you can wait a year to make your decision, you're saying?
Yes.
90 days. 90 days is more than enough. 90 days is more than enough. It really is.
I was going to say it won't take.
Nah, this is a supplement that you're going to take, and you're either going to feel it or you're not. That's it. I mean, there's no adaptation period. This is something you're going to. I took it that morning, and I felt it. Boom.
You talk about somebody being suspect of whether it's going to work or not. Nobody's more suspect than me. I mean, I told Rob. I said, dude, if this thing does not work, I'm going to let you know, and
no,
I'm not
going to
do. I don't want any part of it.
But Rob understands what I'm saying. When you've done radio long enough, you know what people are thinking out in the audience. And I'm just, and I have to say what everybody's thinking. That's why they listen.
But I know the product
works. The last iteration I tried, I liked.
I'm a consumer first and foremost. I didn't even want to get involved in this to make any money. It's like I wanted a pre-workout for me.
Right. Right,
and I take his three other products, and they're great.
Yeah,
the three other products are great. So I'm like, he can make a pre workout.
There's
he
nothing.
Can do it.
There's nothing on the market today like Synthogen. There's nothing like Synthogen.
Every
single older lifter should be taking Synthogen, and they'll thank me if they do. And I made a great testimonial video after I used it, and people like Joshua Trentin said, I'm going to have to try this stuff. And Josh is a raw food eating, exercise equipment designing monster. So
Jeff Galini, I asked him, I said, Jeff, have you tried Rob's pre-workout? Cause he's the one that, put the samples together for us. He said, yeah, I have tried it. He goes, I loved it. He goes, I'm going to be buying it and using it myself.
Yeah.
If that tells you anything, and he's been around the block for how long now?
No, I know.
He's trained with Arnold and Franco and all those guys.
Yep.
And if he likes it.
Let's talk about something else for a second, okay? Because we're coming close to the end of the interview. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I just wanted to mention it's going to be in capsule form.
Oh. Yes. The version I tried, it was, you had to snort it. I had to do two lines of it. That was really,
really good. You did a line of it.
Really good stuff. It was like bath salts, a little bit like bath salts. But anyway.
No.
But, okay, so there's another company that you want to plug, Sean, and I said you can plug them, and it's good for my audience, too. And that's because I constantly get emails from people who say, their doctor won't prescribe testosterone, or their doctor doesn't know anything else about it. They don't know anything about AIs, and they don't know about HCG and all this other stuff. And so they get pigeonholed into working with a doctor who puts them on too little of testosterone. They end up feeling like crap 6 weeks later. I know somebody who's on the air with me that happened to, Rob Regish. And so there's a company out there that operates very quietly because – they don't have to advertise. That is a very, very forward-leaning, progressive HRT clinic, predominantly for men. And you've been using them now, Sean, for quite a long time. And so you wanted to sing the benefits and extol a little credit to them, right?
Yeah, I want everybody out there listening that, you know, is going through those problems, and they're like, you know, my doctor's not giving me an adequate dose, and maybe they don't even know that, but. Rob, yeah, like you said, Rob was one of those guys. I'm the one that turned Rob onto this place. But anyway, yeah. I've been with them since 2009, so that's like 8 years. It's fantastic. They have like over 10,000 active patients. They've been in business since 2002, so they're not going anywhere.
Right.
I mean, that's been in business for 15 years, and they no matter where you live at, they partner up with doctors around the country. They've got like 45 different office locations around the country. But their main office is in Florida. And if you actually were to go to Florida in person, you never have to go back once you go there once, because they can do it over the internet from that point.
Yeah, it's all telemedicine now, except if you live in New York or New Jersey, just so you know that. In New York or New Jersey, they have not accepted telemedicine, so you can't do that there. But
yeah.
Everywhere else in the country, you can. What's the name of the company, Sean?
Well, instead of giving you the name of the company, I'd like to just give you the guy who's the intermediary between the doctor and the patient, and that's who I've been dealing with since 2009. And I'd just like to give out maybe his name and his direct line right to his desk.
That's a good idea.
If that would be all right.
That's a good idea.
And that way everybody can just contact him directly with all their questions,
right,
and whatever, and he can answer them all for
right.
the people.
So if you're a guy looking for a legit, forward-leaning HRT clinic to do the right thing for you, who is the guy? What's the guy's name, and what's his phone number?
So his first name is Kurt, K-U-R-T, and his last name's Lunkwitz, but I won't spell that for you.
It's got to be it's either LUNG or LUNK QUIST.
You're close. It's LUNKWITZ.
Oh, Lunkwitz. You said Lunkwitz.
Yeah, okay. Kurt Lunkwitz.
Lunkwitz.
He's a super guy. I mean, you can't get any better. From the very first time I talked to him, he never, ever pushed anything on me. He didn't pressure me. He just answered my
right.
questions.
Right.
And it was up to me whether I wanted to do it or not.
Right. What's his phone number?
561-427-0356. So I'll say it one more time. 561-427-0356. And he's down in Florida. That's where the main office is at. But like I said, no matter where you live, they've got offices all around
yeah.
the country.
So reach out to Kurt, and if you need another opinion about your HRT, do that. Rob Regish wants to get back to playing with Nicholas Maximus on the beach, rightfully so, like a big, big teddy bear daddy that he is. You've been listening to
Wait.
You've been listening to the Kiss Rob Regish's Ass Hour on Superhuman Radio Network.
Oh God!
You should get, when you get off of this phone, you should walk a little bit taller. Anyway, everybody loves Rob.
Well,
everybody loves Rob.
Yeah.
All right, so that's it. Sean Kinnern, you should have been here.
Yeah,
you should have been here with a 20-ounce filet mignon
and a Coca-Cola.
So, and Rob, go play with Nicholas. Tell Nicholas the Superhuman Nation said we love him.
I will. I appreciate your time, and certainly Sean's. It's an exciting time, and when it's ready, we, of course, will announce it in, for the SHR audience.
Cool. Robin Murphy, who's been listening to the whole show in a dedicated fashion, just turns out that he uses Kurt Lundquist for his HRT, and he says, I have never had a single complaint with them. Interesting. Interesting. Look at that.
Yeah, great.
All right, guys. I'm off the air tomorrow. We don't start doing Casual Friday for another 2 weeks, so I will be working on Fridays very shortly. But I am done, and so glad that we could wrap the week up with these two guys. And thank you to Stuart Dietz. Fascinating interview about honey. If you are tuning in late, you need to listen to the first hour of the podcast once it's up there. And, of course,
It sounded like you guys had a great interview.
Yeah, we did. You'll have to listen to it. And also, don't forget, Saturday at 12 Eastern, which is noon, I will be attempting, I'm sure it will be another technical debacle called Come At Me, Bro, which is my Q&A, live Q&A. And you can email me questions to onair@superhumanradio.net. If you're not going to be there live, I will answer your question and you can listen to it later, because I had a lot of people say, I can't listen to it live, but I have questions. So send them to me at onair@superhumanradio.net or post it on my Facebook page. Yeah, I'm sure you're my friend if you know anything about the Facebook Live events. And I will attempt another Come At Me, Bro tomorrow at 12 noon. Hope you can make it. Everybody else, peace.